Chapter 11. Tom respects the fleet, noon, says Tom, and so it was. His shatter was just a blot around his feet. We looked, and the Greenwich clock was so close to 12 the difference didn't amount to nothing. So Tom said London was right north of us, or right south of us, one or t'other, and he reckoned by the weather, and the sand and the camels it was north, and a good many miles north too. As many as from New York to the City of Mexico, he guessed. Jim said he reckoned a balloon was a good deal the fastest thing in the world, unless it might be some kinds of birds, a wild pigeon, maybe, or a railroad. But Tom said he had read about railroads in England going nearly 100 miles an hour for a little ways, and there never was a bird in the world that could do that except one, and that was a flea. A flea? Why, Mars Tom, in the first place he ain't a bird, strictly speaking, he ain't a bird, eh? Well then, what is he? I don't rightly know, Mars Tom, but I spec he's only just a animal. No, I reckon that won't do, neither, he ain't big enough for a animal. He must be a bug. Yeah, sir, that's what he is, he's a bug. I bet he ain't, but let it go. What's your second place? Well, in the second place, birds is critters that goes a long ways, but a flea don't. He don't he? Come now, what is a long distance, if you know? Why, it's miles, and lots of 'em anybody knows that. Can't a man walk miles? Yasser, he can. As many as a railroad? Yasser, if you give him time. Can't a flea? Well, I suppose so if you gives him heaps of time. Now you begin to see, don't you, that distance ain't the thing to judge by, at all. It's the time it takes to go the distance and that counts, ain't it? Well, it do look sorter so, but I wouldn't a believed it, Mars Tom. It's a matter of proportion, that's what it is. And when you come to gauge a thing's speed by its size, where's your bird and your man and your railroad, alongside of a flea? The fastest man can run more than about 10 miles, in an hour not much over 10,000 times his own length. But all the books says any common ordinary third-class flea can jump 150 times his own length, yes, and he can make 5 jumps a second to 750 times his own length, in one little second, for he don't fool away any time stopping and starting, he does them both at the same time. You will see, if you try to put your finger on him. Now that's a common, ordinary, third-class flea's gait. But you take an Italian first class, that's been the pet of the nobility all his life, and hasn't ever knowed what want or sickness or exposure was, and he can jump more than 300 times his own length, and keep it up all day, 5 such jumps every second, which is 1500 times his own length. Well, suppose a man could go 1500 times his own length in a second, say, a mile and a half. It's 90 miles a minute. It's considerable more than 5,000 miles an hour. Where's your man now? Yes, and your bird, and your railroad, and your balloon? Laws, they don't amount to shucks alongside of a flea. A flea is just a comet built down small. Jim was a good deal astonished, and so was one. Jim said, "Is them figures just exactly true, and no joking and no lies, Mars Tom?" "Yes, they are. They're perfectly true." "Well, then, honey, a body's got to respect a flea. I ain't had no respect for 'em before, scarcely, but they ain't no getting around it. They do deserve it, that's certain." "Well, I bet they do. They've got ever so much more sense, and brains, and brightness, in proportion to their size, than any other critter in the world. A person can learn the most anything, and they learn it quicker than any other critter too. They've been learned to haul little carriages in harness, and go this way and that way and t'other way according to their orders, yes, and to march and drill like soldiers. Doing it as exact, according to orders, as soldiers does it. They've been learned to do all sorts of hard and troublesome things. Suppose you could cultivate a flea up to the size of a man, and keep his natural smartness a-growing and a-growing right along up, bigger and bigger, and keener, in the same proportion where the human race be, do you reckon? That flea would be president of the United States, and you couldn't any more prevent it than you can prevent lightning. My land, Mars Tom, I never know day was so much to the bees. No, sir, I never had no idea of it, and that's the fact. There's more to him, by a long sight, than there is to any other critter, man or beast, in proportion to size. He's the interestingest of them all. People have so much to say about an ant's strength, and an eel-fence, and a locomotive's. Shucks, they don't begin with a flea. He can lift 200 or 300 times his own weight, and none of them can come anywhere near it. And, moreover, he has got notions of his own, and is very particular, and you can't fool him. His instinct, or his judgment, or whatever it is perfectly sound and clear, and don't ever make a mistake. People think all humans are alike to a flea. It ain't so. There's folks that he won't go near, hungry or not hungry, and I'm one of them. I've never had one of them on me in my life. Mars Tom. It's so, I ain't joking. Well, saw, I ain't ever heard the likes o' that before. Jim couldn't believe it, and I couldn't, so we had to drop down to the sand, and get a supply and see. Tom was right. They went for me, and Jim by the thou sand, but not a one of them lit on Tom. There weren't no explaining it, but there it was, and there weren't no getting around it. He said it had always been just so, and he'd just as soon be where there was a million of them as not. They'd never touch him nor bother him. We went up to the cold weather to freeze him out, and stayed a little spell, and then come back to the comfortable weather, and went lazying along 20 or 25 miles an hour, the way we'd been doing for the last few hours. The reason was, that the longer we was in that solemn, peaceful desert, the more the hurry and fuss got kind of soothed down in us, and the more happier, and contented and satisfied we got to feeling, and the more we got to liking the desert, and then loving it. So we had cramped the speed down, as I was saying, and was having a most noble good lazy time, sometimes watching through the glasses, sometimes stretched out on the lockers reading, sometimes taking a nap. It didn't seem like we was the same lot that was in such a state to find land and get ashore, but it was. But we had got over that, clean over it. We was used to the balloon now, and not afraid anymore, and didn't want to be anywhere else. Why, it seemed just like home. It most seemed as if I had been born and raised in it, and Jim and Tom said the same. And always I had hateful people around me, a-nagging at me, and pestering of me, and scolding, and finding fault, and fussing and bothering, and sticking to me, and keeping after me, and making me do this, and making me do that and t'other, and always selecting out the things I didn't want to do, and then giving me Sam Hill, because I shirked, and done something else, and just aggravating the life out of a body all the time. But up here in the sky it was so still, and sunshiny and lovely, and plenty to eat, and plenty of sleep, and strange things to see, and no nagging, and no pester dashing, and no good people, and just holiday all the time. Land, I weren't in no hurry to get out and buck at civilization again. Now, one of the worst things about civilization is, that anybody that gets a letter with trouble in it comes, and tells you all about it, and makes you feel bad, and the newspapers fetches you the troubles of everybody all over the world, and keeps you downhearted and dismal most all the time, and it's such a heavy load for a person. I hate them newspapers, and I hate letters. And if I had my way I wouldn't allow nobody to load his troubles onto other folks he ain't acquainted with, on t'other side of the world, that way. Well, up in a balloon there ain't any of that, and it's the darlingest place there is. We had supper, and that night was one of the prettiest nights I ever see. The moon made it just like daylight, only a heap softer, and once we see a lion standing all alone by himself, just all alone on the earth, it seemed like, and his shadow laid on the sand by him like a puddle of ink. That's the kind of moonlight to have. Mainly we laid on our backs and talked. We didn't want to go to sleep. Tom said we was right in the midst of the Arabian Nights now. He said it was right along here that one of the cutest things in that book happened. So we looked down and watched while he told about it, because there ain't anything that is so interesting to look at as a place that a book has talked about. It was a tale about a camel driver that had lost his camel, and he come along in the desert and met a man, and says, "Have you run across a stray camel today?" And the man says, "Was he blind in his left eye?" "Yes." "Had he lost an upper front tooth?" "Yes." "Was his off hind leg lame?" "Yes." "Was he loaded with millet seed on one side and honey on the other?" "Yes, but you needn't go into no more details, that's the one, and I'm in a hurry." "Where did you see him?" "I ain't seen him at all," the man says. "Ain't seen him at all? How can you describe him so close, then?" "Because when a person knows how to use his eyes, everything has got a meaning to it. But most people's eyes ain't any good to them. I knowed a camel had been along, because I seen his track. I knowed he was lame in his off hind leg, because he had favored that foot and trod light on it, and his track showed it. I knowed he was blind on his left side, because he only nibbled the grass on the right side of the trail. I knowed he had lost an upper front tooth, because where he bit into the sod his teeth print showed it. The millet seed sifted out on one side, the ants told me that. The honey leaked out on the other, the flies told me that. I know all about your camel, but I ain't seen him." Jim says, "Go on, Mars Tom, it's a mighty good tale, and powerful interesting." "That's all," Tom says. "All?" says Jim, astonished. "What commode a camel?" "I don't know." "Mars Tom, don't the tale say?" "No." Jim puzzled a minute, then he says, "Well, if that ain't the beaten's tail ever I struck. Just gets to the place what the interest is getting red hot, and down she breaks. Why, Mars Tom, they ain't no sense in a tail that acts like that. Ain't you got no idea whether the man got the camel back or not?" "No, I haven't. I see myself there warn't no sense in the tail to chop square off that way before it come to anything, but I weren't going to say so, because I could see Tom was souring up pretty fast over the way it flatted out, and the way Jim had popped onto the weak place in it, and I don't think it's fair for everybody to pile on to a feller when he's down. But Tom, he whirls on." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.